Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend's edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and our podcast, The KE Report. Look, as much as these markets continue to, I guess, digest all of this news and factor in Fed expectations, which continue to lean to the side of a pause, which we all know is coming, and some rate cuts, which who knows when those will start coming, plus a recession by the tail end of this year, which seems like we keep getting beaten over the head with that narrative. I want to more take a step back, talk more big picture, because look, for as many investors as we have, or as many guests as we have on the show, we like to talk more big picture themes. And there's one theme that we hear a bit more about recently, although I have heard this term thrown around over the last decade plus, is more this commodity super cycle. In fact, where commodity prices should rise, everything else seems to have risen in terms of asset prices over the last decade. But commodities, while they are close to breaking out to some all-time high levels, many commodities still have been unable to break out. And on top of that, build on some of those gains. So we're going to focus a lot on commodities for this weekend show. We're kicking off this show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, from this high-level term of a commodity super cycle, I want to start out with the most basic definition that you have for a commodity super cycle. Please share with us what you think this whole term of a commodity super cycle means for markets, for commodities prices, filtering down for investors.
Well, I am a believer in the idea that we're in a new commodity super cycle. And to me, what that simply means is that there are cyclical drivers for commodities, and that would be coming out of recession, economy does well, that supports commodity prices, they go up. Economy, you know, starts to, you know, sputter and weaken, that's bearish for commodities, and they go down. A commodity super cycle is kind of bigger than the cyclical driving forces for commodities trends. The idea of a super cycle is that we're in a trend of higher prices for commodities that is secular in nature. So that there are drivers that are bigger macro drivers than just what's going on cyclically. And to me, what drives these secular forces are simple, you know, long-term supply and demand factors. And I think the biggest one to pay attention to that affects supplies, I think, to the greatest extent, is just the capital cycle. So when something, you know, let's say the price of whatever it is doing really, really well, it can be tech stocks, it can be commodities, it can be whatever you want. That strong performance attracts a bunch of capital that comes into that sector. All of that capital gets invested in new supplies, which eventually overwhelm the demand in the market, and that creates a bearish dynamic for prices. When you have a sector that's done poorly in terms of price performance, capital abandons that sector of the economy. It says we can't invest in this anymore. This, you know, this has been a terrible thing to own, and that sector of the economy gets starved of capital. Well, that results in supplies dropping in a dramatic way, right? Companies can't invest in new supplies if they don't have capital. When that happens for a prolonged period of time, it sets the stage for very, crimped supplies. And if demand stays the same, then you have the components in place for an important bottom and powerful uptrend in prices. And I think that's where we are in commodities generally. I'm looking at things like oil and mining, where, just to take the oil price, for example, in 2008 to the mid 2010s, we had a huge boom where the energy sector just attracted a massive amount of cheap capital, right? Fed lowers interest rates to zero in the great financial crisis. A lot of that easy money went into the fracking companies who invested in massive new supplies in U.S. oil production. What happened? Oil price crashes in 2014, actually goes negative during the pandemic. And really since that 2014 time period, for the past decade, the energy industry has been starved of capital. And so there's been no investment, essentially, in new production of oil. Meanwhile, demand continues to climb and hit new records. And so you have this situation where supplies can't easily meet that demand, and it takes a lot of new capital. That capital has to be invested in new supplies. That process takes a long period of time to play out. And so that's what really drives a bullish super cycle for commodity prices that really transcends the economic cycle. So yes, right now we're seeing the oil price weaken, copper prices weaken. People are worried about what recession would do to demand for these things. And there are still cyclical factors going on. But I think the bigger picture factor is that copper supplies are seriously hampered. Oil supplies are seriously hampered. And so the demand over the next several years or in the next decade is going to be such that it's going to set the stage for stronger price action for a number of years.
Yeah, Jesse, you make a great point there when you think about there's small cyclical trends like where there'll be a recession or not that last maybe a year or two, maybe a couple of years, but there's secular trends that last really decades. And what you think of the commodities cycle, a lot of that was based previously on the China factor. You know, China was building all these huge cities and infrastructure and trains in the middle of nowhere and ghost cities. And that fueled a huge commodities run that petered out a while ago. But if you think about the last decade or two, the narrative has really been about the switch to this green energy, the switch to EVs, the switch to the electrification of all the developing nations. And we've been hearing that narrative for over a decade now. I remember in 2011 and 2012, these huge peaks in lithium and rare earths and all these different things to fund this big cycle. But really, it's the base metals like copper and nickel and just some basic mines that are going to have to be built to supply this new green energy revolution, this electrification narrative, and we haven't seen any investment for over a decade now. So when I think about the commodity supercycle, I think about this global push to fix emissions, to electrify the world, and there's not the investment in the mines, to your point. So do you think that is what the next decade is going to be about, this investment from nations around the world into mining to get the supply of raw materials that they need for these initiatives that they say are so important to their policies?
I was talking about the supply side of commodities, you know, are really affected by this capital cycle. You're referencing the demand side. And so supplies are hampered, and demand for these things is only going to go up, right? If we look at energy, the IEA revised its forecast for demand for this year to new record highs, right? I think a lot of people who are talking about the green revolution are under the maybe misguided belief that demand for fossil fuels is going to peak and roll over, and it's just not going to do that anytime soon. And so, with demand hitting new record highs and supplies, becoming increasingly limited, that's bullish for oil prices. Copper is just as, if not even more interesting from that demand perspective, because if we do want to create a green revolution and decarbonize the economy, it's going to take a lot of copper. And, there's a great article in Bloomberg today about this, how the headline was "The Green Energy Transition Has a Chilean Copper Problem." Or if you look at, the largest copper producer in the world, their production in the last 10 years is down by, 30% plus, right? So production is falling in terms of copper. At the same time, demand is going to surge from the need to build more electric vehicles and then the infrastructure and electricity production to power them, not to mention all the other alternative energy sources, which are very heavy users of copper. So the supply side of the picture for these things, like I said, is very hampered by the capital cycle, which has starved these companies for years. And now we have demand literally beginning a period of just hitting new record highs, and it's going to continue to hit record highs for the foreseeable future. And so that those are the drivers of the commodity super cycle that is going to drive higher commodity prices for a long time to come.
Jesse, is this a country by country situation, or is this a global situation here where money needs to get cheaper for miners or even for these development companies? Simply because, look, we hear a lot about how expensive the cost of capital is for these companies to build mines and then even to operate them.
Well, it could be, you know, debt capital, it could be equity capital, but the money needs to flow into these companies in some form or another in order for them to invest heavily in making sure the supplies are available for what we want to accomplish. And to answer your question directly, this is a global thing, right? We see it's not just the United States that wants to decarbonize and pursue this kind of green energy transition. It's Europe and Western nations are pressuring countries around the world to kind of follow suit and pursue these measures to create a cleaner energy. So there's going to be this global push in this direction, and it's already happening. So before this super cycle is over, we're going to have to see a lot of capital flowing into this sector of the economy, into commodity production, into these things, whether it's, these into the equity, into the debt, whatever. So these companies need to see the capital come in order for them to have the confidence to invest in supplies. I mean, I think energy is another good example here, where you see the U.S. energy producers are saying, look, we're not going to invest in new supplies because prices are really still very low in terms of, real prices of commodities, real prices of energy. And just the nominal price of things like natural gas are so cheap that we're not going to invest in these things until prices go up a bunch and until we get a bunch more capital to get this done. And so that takes years. This is not a cycle that's going to happen in the next 18 months or something. Something's going to take 3 to 5 years before you finally get the type of returns in the sector that attracts capital, that capital starts, getting invested in increased supplies.
What comes first? Is it price increases or then the capital flows in, or capital flows in and then price goes up?
Well, we're seeing the returns in energy, right? I mean, it's amazing to me that a lot of these, U.S. energy companies, independent energy companies, trade at 5x cash flow right now. Investors are essentially betting on these cyclical forces being more powerful than the secular forces. They're essentially betting on we're going back to the old paradigm of the last 15 years, which we're going to go back to low interest rates, low inflation, all of these things, and energy is not going to be a great bet. And then we're going to see a recession and energy prices are going to crash again as part of that. But energy companies are printing money right now. I mean, they're the most profitable companies, in the market. If you look at what the S&P 500 earnings would look like without energy, it's not pretty. I think we're seeing a 3% year-over-year decline in earnings, and it would be much more significant than that without the energy sector right now. So I think eventually, if cash flow stays as good as it is for these energy companies for a period of time, investors are going to have to say, hey, look, where else can I get, five times cash flow, right? I mean, that's a 20% cash on cash return investing in these things. Eventually, that's going to look attractive to investors. They're going to put money to work there. And that will be part of this process.
Well, Jesse, another thing to think about when you look at the commodity supercycle is how commodities have fared relative to other asset classes. And when you peel back the layers of time and look at this over decades, Jeffrey Gundlach had a great chart out maybe 2 years ago that a lot of people circulated for months and months after that, showing how undervalued commodities were relative to bonds, relative to stocks, relative to real estate. So when you look at things over that kind of perspective, even though there were some peaks like the oil peak in 2008 or uranium had a peak back in 2010, 2011, there are many commodities, and especially in the metal side of things, but even if it was even in the soft commodities, that are incredibly low relative to other asset classes. Bonds were in a 40-year bubble. Real estate has been surging for decades. When you think about the asset class of stocks, the last dozen years was like a straight up sugar rush from all the Fed liquidity that they infuse, but that didn't find its way into the commodity sector. So isn't part of this just how commodities will fare versus other asset classes? Because if you look at them in nominal terms, it can be misleading. But when you look at them in inflation-adjusted terms, commodities are still very low historically, especially compared to other asset classes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a post that a blog post I published just about 3 years ago on my blog that was, the title was A Generational Opportunity in Commodities. It showed that ratio of the Goldman Sachs Commodities Index to the Dow Jones Industrial Average, just the ratio of commodities to stocks. And when you look at that, you can see the only other time commodities were as cheap relative to stocks as they are today, still, even after the commodities boom that we've had over the past couple of years, they're still about as cheap as they were in the, you know, in 1966, 67, right? And that was, you know, by far the cheapest they've ever been in 100 years, in the last century. What did the commodity, you know, commodities to stock market ratio do from 65 to 85? Well, you know, it went up fivefold. So part of it is valuation. Yes, commodities are extremely cheap. And you know, I think people have this idea, maybe a misunderstanding of commodities prices when they look back and go, well, oil, you know, oil price is actually pretty high. Yes, compared to 2020, compared to the oil price going negative in 2020, when you look back, the oil price peak in 2008, whatever it was, $150 a barrel, something, we're down 50% from that level 15 years later. So if you just look at, you know, let's inflation adjust the oil price somehow. Let's just, you know, deflate it by CPI. Or I prefer to kind of look at the oil price to M2 ratio. It's extremely cheap, right? Oil prices are about as cheap as they typically ever get when you look at, you know, the oil price relative to the money supply. You could do the same for copper prices. You could do the same thing for commodities to M2 generally. Commodities are extremely cheap, and so valuations are a big part of the story as well.
So, Jesse, is there one commodity or a group of commodities that you think will outperform the rest of them? If we are in this bullish cycle, then what will do better for investors?
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious, the two that I'm focused most on, copper and energy prices, so, you know, oil and natural gas. But, you know, I think it's interesting to look at Newmont's acquisition of Newcrest this week. And you know, Newmont said one of the driving forces for this were it was going to give them greater exposure to copper. And I think that's a pretty clear sign that Newmont is aware of what's going on in the copper market and the supply-demand dynamics there over the next several years. And so, you know, I think copper is kind of a no-brainer because supplies are so hampered. And, you know, with this green revolution, demand is going to go through the roof. And so this is a multi-year play in a recession. Copper prices could you know, sell off further in the short run. But longer term, you know, there's going to be more demand than supplies can actually meet. And that's going to drive a much higher copper price. Energy, I think, too, you know, the traditional fossil fuels, especially just oil and natural gas prices, I think are, you know, in the early stages of a bigger boom. If you look at, you know, where should oil prices be inflation adjusted? Just, you know, look at 2008. If we just went back to the 2008 high in the oil price, it would still be down in real terms significantly. So oil prices could double, I think, pretty easily and not be overvalued. You know, what would that do for energy company profit? It would be, you know, you'd probably see the stock prices go up 5-10 fold if you had a sustainable rise in oil prices to that, you know, in that meaningful way. And so I think that this is really what defines this new investment paradigm. I think, you know, that is marked by this commodity super cycle, a return of inflation, and what it means for monetary policy and portfolios, investment portfolios going forward. It all kind of speaks to the same trend, the same dynamics and things to pay attention to, which is the paradigm of the last 15 years, the last, you know, the post GFC paradigm of 0% interest rates and money printing and what that meant for asset prices is over. And we're in a new paradigm of normalization of monetary policy, normalization of inflation or return of inflation. And that has huge implications for how portfolios should be positioned in the years to come.
So one quick comment, just following up on your comment there on energy prices, potentially even doubling from where they are. Doesn't that hold back some of these producers? Would you then need to expect the underlying commodities price, like copper or whatever metal you're looking at, to then double or even more than double to offset some of these higher costs?
I mean, absolutely, right? We've seen, you know, this is, I think, part of the problem that's going on in the housing market right now is we've seen, you saw home prices come down a little bit after the pandemic boom, but the home prices are going back up again. Why is that? It's because labor costs have gone up so much. It's because raw material prices are so much higher. The ability to get permitting and all these things has become more costly. And so this is what happens in an inflationary environment, right? Is the cost of everything goes up, and home builders aren't going to build, you know, at a loss. So it's the same thing for whatever, you know, like you say, copper production, things too, you know. Part of the reason why, you know, supplies have been so hampered is because, you know, we're just not going to produce at unprofitable rates. Same thing, I think, that's going on in the energy market right now with oil prices and things. It makes no sense for us to pump a bunch of oil right now when prices are, as they believe, too low. So, you know, I think this is the problem, is you need much higher prices in all of these things in order to encourage the type of supply response that we need to get these initiatives done.
Well, Jesse, do you think most generalist investors have got that memo yet? Because when you look at the general stock market, it's still at levels of valuation that are in nosebleed territory. You posted something just over the weekend that had a series of different ideas in it, but one of them was about the CAPE ratio, and it just shows how lofty U.S. stocks still are with their PE, the price to earnings ratios. And when you look at the commodity sector and you look at the stocks in oil and gas or in copper or in gold and silver or just any of the commodities, they're nowhere close to those valuations. Do you think that fund managers and analysts and generalist investors will eventually wake up to how overvalued the stock market still is, and it can actually get chopped in half and still be fairly valued, where these commodity stocks are still down bottom barrel as far as their valuations? Do you think investors will finally have that light bulb come on for them?
They absolutely will. I mean, because the dynamics I'm talking about will force them to that type of a realization. But what we've seen so far this year in the stock market is investors just going back to the old playbook, right? We're buying the dip in big tech stocks. And if we're going back to this old paradigm of 0% interest rates, the Fed can resume money printing, inflation goes back, you know, very, very low, then that'll work out for them. But if I'm right, and we are in a new paradigm, then if you look at the top five biggest tech stocks in the market, I'm talking about Microsoft, Apple, Nvidia, Tesla, and Amazon. These are the five biggest stocks in the NASDAQ. Put all their cash flow together, they trade 65 times their aggregate cash flow. That might actually be appropriate under the old paradigm. But in fact, over the last 10 years, they've traded at an average of 30 times free cash flow. So, you know, the fact that they're trading more than double their average valuation means that investors are crowding into these things under the assumption that what has worked over the last 15 years is going to work over the next five. And I think that's just not the case. If the Fed is forced to continue to try and normalize monetary policy, interest rates are going to stay anywhere above zero for any length of time. Valuations are going to be pressured, right? Valuations of these things, you know, which quote unquote growth stocks, you know, Apple's revenue growth is 0%. Meta's revenue growth 0% or negative. These aren't growth stocks anymore, and the valuations would the valuations have to come down in an environment where you have, you know, 5% risk-free return. So, I think we're approaching a realization on the part of investors where they're going to have to say, hey, look, you know, in this new environment, The Fed is no longer a support of valuations for these things. And, you know, we have to look to what works better in an inflationary environment, what works better in an environment where interest rates are at more normal levels or not at extreme lows. to your point, you know, I did highlight that article from Stan, or the quote from Stan Druckenmiller. He said it wasn't just the biggest. This wasn't just the biggest bubble he's ever seen in his career. It's the biggest bubble he's ever studied. And I think that speaks to the valuations in the equity market. That's the other flip side of, right, this commodities to stock ratio. So commodities look extremely cheap, but also part of the reason they look so cheap is that equities are so extremely overvalued, right? And so I think, you know, a big part of this is equity valuations have to come down in a structural way, in a secular trend. At the same time, commodities are in this kind of secular uptrend.
All right, Jesse, we'll wrap it up here. But look, there is a huge misvaluation if you value where tech stocks have gone compared to a lot of other assets. But commodities, I know, we need them, right? And we keep on using them. And looking at the demand metrics, we keep on using more and more of them. And their prices just haven't quite popped, I guess, quite well at all, like tech stocks have. But boy, oh boy, with the amount of money that's out there, you would think that a bit more would flow into some of these commodities. And the companies, we have seen a better environment, but I think we're all just waiting for that upcoming breakout. I do really appreciate you taking this more big picture look at what's going on in these markets and where money has flown. Unfortunately, just not so much into the commodities, but boy, oh boy, we have seen a generally better environment for commodities recently. We'll see where this all takes us. But hey, Jesse, I really appreciate reading over all your work at the Felder Report. And I do appreciate you taking time to share your thoughts on the markets with us. So hey, we'll chat with you next month. Again, thank you so much for sharing your time and your thoughts on these markets.
Always great to chat with you guys. Thanks.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.